The Natural Hat Trick, hosted by Luke Lipinski and Craig Morgan.
Welcome into episode 274-ish of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Craig Morgan.
I feel like we've been in the 270s for a while.
Yeah, about 2 years.
Months, yeah. Okay, yeah, maybe years.
And Steve Peters.
Yeah, here for number two, so I got a long way to go.
What's going on, Petey?
You know, just getting through the days right now. I'm happy baseball season's starting, Luke. Give me something else to watch, so that's good. Yeah.
I'm Luke Lipinski. We got a lot to talk about. I've got this apple here in honor of Eric Carlson, so I'll just chew it throughout the show and answer your questions disdainfully. Does that work? Like Eric Carlson did the other night after his big game. All right, guys, you know what? Last week we started big picture NHL. Let's start in the actual, with the Coyotes and the beginning of a very pivotal season defining, whatever you want to call it, road trip. Still just a point out of a playoff spot. It feels a lot worse, though, when you give up 9 goals and have your best forward's helmet thrown at his face. So, Craig, let's start with you. What was your reaction to that Colorado game?
As I wrote, I have learned not to judge the Coyotes through the lens of the Colorado Avalanche because it's an ugly picture. It will always be an ugly picture. And that was a particularly ugly picture. The game was over in 5 minutes. And I thought for a second, actually, there was 1 minute where I thought they were back in the game. And then, of course, they gave up a quick goal at the end of the second period. But that was just ugliness. I don't know what else to say about it. I hate the expression, we need to flush it, because you hear that way too often. But in this particular case, they have to flush that game because it's these next 4 games that are so huge for them in the standings, playing in Southern California against the Ducks and the Kings.
Yeah, and that's the good news for them. You know, you lose 9-3. It's embarrassing. You're frustrated. But when the game's over, you lost 1 game. You didn't lose 6. You didn't lose a 7-game series. You lost 1 game. You didn't lose any ground in the standings, but points for the playoffs. It's 1 game. But I also look at it and go, one of the things you hear about games like that is, oh, our guys weren't ready to play or they weren't ready to start. It's a term I've never really grasped. I don't understand not ready to play. I don't get that. Like, from a coaching perspective, they've been talking about this game at least that whole day. Like, there's been meetings and video meetings and one-on-ones and practices focusing on that game. I don't understand not ready to play. I get it in 3 and 4 and you're tired, but not ready to play is a term to me. They just made mistakes early. So is that not ready to play mentally? I don't know.
Let me ask you about that. I'm glad you brought it up because there's this widespread belief in sports that it's the coach's job to have his team ready to play. And even Tockett said after the game, he said, that's on me. I guess we weren't ready to play. I thought we were ready to play. To be perfectly honest, Petey, I don't buy it. I think that's on the team, particularly senior leadership, to make sure that the team is ready to play. But I think it's incumbent on the players to have themselves prepared to play.
Yeah, and I think what you said is a good point, and that's why I brought it up too, because I listened to Tock say that's on me. And I know how Rick Tockett prepares for a game. Rick Tockett was prepared. Like, he's been thinking about that game for 3 days. They practiced thinking about it. They planned thinking about it. They had meetings thinking about it. So for Rick Tockett to say that team wasn't prepared, that's not true. They were prepared. Now, ready to play? I don't know. Does he bring pom-poms into the locker room and go, hey, let's go? You're playing the best team in the league over the last 12 games. You're playing in a building that has fans for the first time in a year. I'm struggling to find out where that emotional lift has to come from. And I agree with you, Craig. It has to be from the players. And players have a routine. When they get to the rink, what time they pour their first coffee, when they stretch, when do they change into their workout gear before the game, when do they walk down the hallway? All of those things are extremely structured. And when you say a guy's not ready to play, I don't know if that player is preparing enough before the game for that game. And again, I'll go back to the 3 and 4 or the 9th game of a 10-day road trip. Those are all anomalies. Those anomalies. Those are hard to prepare for. This one, to me, was it's Colorado Avalanche. You're 1 point out of the playoffs. I expected a better start. But once you make the mistakes you made in the first 5 minutes and you're down 5-1, I honestly, I've never seen a player get a hat trick in 7 minutes. I don't think I've seen one. So at that point, you're just hanging on. Let's not get hurt. Let's get through this game. Let's survive. You know, and to your point, they made us a brief comeback, but they played so poorly with so many individual mental mistakes that you just can't recover.
I want to talk about two things on that comeback. First of all, I don't want to single Jordan Oesterle out, but Petey, as a coach, as guys on the bench, I mean, you get back to 5-3, and that's not a, oh, you know, it was a great play by somebody else. That at least from the outside looked like just a lazy, like, here, I'm going to try and cut some corners and throw a backhand pass across the center of the ice. Not something typical of Jordan Oesterle. So like I said, I'm not trying to single him out, but how does the team or the coaches, how do the coaches react after a play like that? Because they were back in that game. It was a 2-goal game. They had some momentum, and the Coyotes have come back from multiple goal deficits a lot this season. I know they ended up losing by 6, so it's hard to sit here and say one play cost them the game, but that certainly felt like it kind of put the game away for Colorado, and then they just piled on in the third.
Yeah, you feel sorry for a guy like Jordan Oesterle. He's a guy that's well-liked in the room. He usually does things the right way. You don't notice him much because the plays he makes are just small little plays. He just does them right. When you're playing the Colorado Avalanche, the quickest team in the National Hockey League, you need to keep the puck out of the middle of the ice. There's no reason to ever make a cross ice pass between the blue lines, unless you are 100% sure. That puck always goes up the wall. I mean, I know I can hear the coaches talking, chip, 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 and chip it in. They want to use the boards because you can create, there's less danger when the puck's along the wall than was in the middle of the ice. It's just a really unusual play for him to make at that time. But that's indicative of the whole night. It was just individual mistakes that cost that game. Guys just, you know, altitude. I don't know. They just weren't there. And again, one game. So as Craig alluded to earlier, you flush it and use that term flush. And I know you see it in the media. Rick Tocchet did not flush that game. He might have in the locker room. He might not have. He might have walked in post game and say, okay, that one's over. Let's go to California. But as soon as he got to the coach's room, he did anything but flush that. He would have gone over that game. He would have been on the plane watching the game again. He would be looking at every detail of the game on how they can improve. Rick Tocchet does not flush games. When he says that, he means there's nothing we can learn from that from the player's side. I can't coach those kind of mistakes. So for him, he'll wear that until they get on the ice against Anaheim.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Or go ahead, Craig.
Go ahead, Luke. You go ahead and finish your thought because I'm moving.
The second part of that game is, like you guys keep saying, it's just one game and you're just a point out of a playoff spot. And the Coyotes play Colorado one more time. St. Louis plays them 6 more times. And the last time St. Louis played them, they lost 8-0 to Colorado. Like, the schedule, as we detailed last week, certainly favors the Coyotes going forward. Where I would be concerned of it bleeding into another game is right now your goalies are Aiden Hill and Ivan Prosvetov, who are both very young. Prosvetov in particular, they didn't have much of a choice, but how much hesitation do you think there is from Tocchet and the coaching staff to throw him into a situation like that? Because that's about the worst situation to play your first game.
A lot, I would think. Yeah, there's no way you want him making his debut in a situation like that. But what do you do? I mean, Aiden Hill clearly had to be pulled. Even if you blame, you know, don't blame Aiden Hill, you have to make that decision at that point. My question is moving forward, what if you have to play him again? Do you really even want to play Ivan Prosvetov at this point? I don't think they think he's ready to play. So I think what they're hoping is, you know, you can manage this. You got a back-to-back coming up, so you have to consider it in this weekend series. But I think they're hoping they can minimize it as much as possible. Darcy Kemper's already on the trip. He's already skating. So maybe they can get him back at some point in this trip, and you don't have to do that to Ivan Prosvetov because that can ruin a goalie's confidence.
Yeah, I think the difficulty with that, Craig, you have to manage the goalies. And when you look through what's happened to this team up until this point, some of the trouble they're in with their goalies is they weren't able to manage them due to injuries, which caused other injuries. Kemper playing 17 of the first 18 was not the plan. He was forced to because of the injury to Ranta, and they were concerned about playing Hill. Well, that caused wear and tear and wore down Kemper. Now he's out. So you've got 2 back-to-backs in 4 cities in 9 days. Ivan's going to play. Like, I know we can sit there and go, well, Hill can manage that time, but what happens if he gets hurt?
Yeah.
So you're gonna see Ivan on this trip, and I don't know. You play Anaheim tomorrow. They're not strong offensively. They don't get a lot of shots on net. I think you might see Hill play these 2 back to back, especially because they play LA on the second half of that back to back, and that to me is the most important game of this trip so far. Clearly, they need to win that game. So I would see Hill doing that back-to-back. The second back-to-back, you're talking about that's day 10, 11, 12 of the trip. You're playing Vegas and Colorado. They're not going to throw Kemper into those games. He hasn't had a full practice yet, so he won't play. Ivan's going to get one of the big boys and just hold on. I mean, that's unfortunate for the kid. You'd like to develop him differently, but you also have to look at the bigger picture. You got to keep Aiden Hill healthy. So Ivan, I would suspect Ivan's going to play next weekend in either Vegas or Colorado.
Playing Vegas and Colorado back-to-back right now just sounds miserable. And that not just from the Coyotes' perspective, but like unless you're Tampa Bay, playing those two teams back-to-back sounds miserable. All right, I don't do the whole show on just this one game, but I do, before we move on to the rest of the road trip, that helmet toss from Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, Craig, I saw what you wrote, classless. There's not really a better way to describe it. The thing is, Nathan MacKinnon is typically classy. So it was unless my perception. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's not going to win the Lady Bing after that toss. No, I don't know. What did you guys think of that one?
I wrote exactly what I thought. I know there was an altercation that led to it, but you simply can't have that in the game. That's uncalled for. And even if he was trying to aim lower, sorry, you don't throw someone's helmet at them. That is simply a classless and dangerous play. And I hate the fact that the NHL maximum fine is $5,000 because, I mean, it's a joke. Nathan MacKinnon can reach into his pocket and pay that. That's a joke. There needs to be a stiffer fine for something like that, because that's a play that you can't see in the game.
Yeah, and I agree with all those things, Craig. I wonder what I missed watching the game leading up to that point. Because you talk about MacKinnon had 10 penalty minutes all of last year, 12 up to this point, and that was 14 minutes in one play. 14 minutes of penalties for MacKinnon. He does not play like this. And you watch that particular play, Garland pushes him. There's a little hit there, but he doesn't, you know, there's nothing dirty. There's nothing at the head. There's no stick in the back. I don't know why Nathan MacKinnon was so frustrated by that. And I think that the other thing it does, it points to what Connor Garland brings to the ice. If you can frustrate one of the premier players in the game to the point where he snaps, you're doing something right. He can get under your skin, and if you can get into the playoffs, those are the kind of players that can disrupt the top opponents on the other team. So Connor Garland, that's the kind of player we've talked about him being all year, and he created a monster in Nathan MacKinnon. Now, the score was out of reach by then. MacKinnon's probably thinking, this should be an easy game. What are you doing, kid? But Connor Garland doesn't have an off switch. He's going to keep coming at you. So I'm really disappointed. I agree, Craig. You're better off at that point. If you're that upset, drop the gloves. No one's going to be upset if he drops the gloves and they fight. I know there's people that don't like that. That is part of hockey. And unfortunately, the people that disagree with that, those are the instances where I think fighting is important. I don't like two tough guys lining up, dropping gloves and fighting. You don't see that anymore. Sticking up for a teammate or yourself, I think those fights are necessary because the rules can't always protect you. You cannot ever throw a stick, throw a helmet, and that's too far. And I agree with you. The fine needed to be steeper than it was.
Yeah, $5,000 is not going to deter anybody. Even though Nathan MacKinnon's one of the most underpaid players, superstars in this league, $5,000, he probably did have that in his pockets on the ice. Okay, talking about Connor Garland, Craig, you wrote a great piece on him, he's so candid about everything, and he's so insightful and thoughtful. Like you don't typically hear a player, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ahead of the trade deadline, be like, yeah, I'm noticing this stuff, and maybe it did actually impact my play. And it's a great piece on azcoyotesinsider.com. You know, we've had Connor on this podcast before. We've all talked to him. Obviously, he's coached him. You look ahead now a week and a half to the trade deadline actually happens. I mean, he said in that piece, he feels like he's gotten his game back, the two games against San Jose. You know, he was one of the few kind of bright spots against Colorado. Michael Bunting was really the only one. But Connor Garland going forward, Craig, just what were your impressions of how he's handling his success this season?
Well, first of all, I mean, how he's handling the success, I don't even think he thinks about the success so much as what he can do to get better. One of the things that always strikes me, when we go into an off season, when players have their exit meetings and then the media gets to talk to all of them, I always ask players, what's your off-season plan? What does it look like? What do you plan to do? And like 90% of the players will tell you, I just want to work on everything, get better in all areas of the game. Again, going back to the cliche book, they all say that. You're like, okay, so I don't really have a story to write on you right now because you haven't given me anything. And Connor Garland will tell you, well, I want to work on this particular area of my skating, and I'm going to be with my figure skating coach, which he has, to work on this specific. He'll come up with three specific things that he wants to get better on in the off season. He'll tell you about him. He'll go into detail. That's just how he is with everything. And so you asked me how he's handling this whole situation. He was really candid about saying, yeah, it impacted him. He didn't want to say he was distracted in the games because he always focuses on the games, but he called it not clear-headed. You know, when you have other things swirling around, it can take you off your game a little bit. You're thinking too much. You're not moving your feet as much, and you're not playing the game that you know you can play. He admitted it got to him for a while. And then he got to a point where he realized he had to stop worrying about that stuff. It was his job to just be able to put that stuff to the side and go out and play. And then the last few games, he felt like he had.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about Connor Garland and what he said about the trade deadline, Craig, the reality is he's just being honest and saying what every single player that has been through that experience is thinking. And the ones that say, it doesn't bother me, I don't read that, they're not being truthful. I've seen it in the room. And guys, when leading up to that time, it is incredibly stressful. Guys are walking on pins and needles around their teammates. And I've heard it outside of the locker room. Well, they're paid millions of dollars. It's part of the game. Imagine, though, you go to work on a Monday in Phoenix, Arizona, and by the end of the day, when you leave for the day, you're packing to go to Buffalo or Columbus or Edmonton. It is such a drastic change. You're talking about not only do you have to meet new teammates, new coaching style, new city, you've got to find an apartment. How am I going to pack? What suits do I bring? What happens if you traded while you're on the road? And all of these things are real life problems that when we sit back and be armchair quarterbacks going, well, he makes $1 million. So what? You know, and these are people's lives. It's incredibly stressful. So if they say they're not stressed or don't think about it or it doesn't affect them, I really don't believe that they're being truthful. There are guys that will get traded to go to better cities, meaning teams that have a chance to win the cup. They're excited, but that doesn't happen that second. It's, why don't you like me? What did I do wrong? I mean, honestly, his honesty was so refreshing to hear. It was a great article, Craig. And I'll pat you on the back there a little bit, but
we don't do that on this.
Wish
show,
there was more of that.
We definitely don't need to do that.
Never pat Craig on the back.
Add to what you were just saying, too, Petey, and you're right. It drives me crazy when suddenly the amount of money that someone has paid suddenly is able to dismiss all the other issues in their life. It's absurd, first of all.
And he doesn't even make that much.
Relative to most people, he still does. But a little bit of empathy. Try and step into someone's shoes and imagine what they're going through. The other side of all of this is the family concerns. Whether you're leaving your family behind or whether you're uprooting a family, that's incredibly stressful on a lot of people. And you're getting that at home. Let's take the case of Derek Stepan, by the way, who didn't go with the deadline, but he had to go across the border in quarantine, leave his wife. They had just had a baby. That was his situation. And you think, well, he's making a lot of money, so what's the big deal? That's a huge deal. Yeah. That would be stressful for anyone's life. And to be honest, anyone who's listening here or any of our readers, I would tell you to think about that a little more deeply, because the idea that someone makes a lot of money so they don't have any stresses in their life is just absurd.
Yeah, and even I look at myself, you know, and I'm no longer with the Coyotes, but if I want to work in the league again, I may or may not, but I have a choice. You know, if Team X opens up and they offer, you know what, I'm not sure about the weather or the travel or whatever this is, I can decide. These guys, they don't get to decide. This is where you are now going to live and work for 7-8 months of the year. It's a bigger deal than people think. I just want, like you said, walk in their shoes for 1 minute and then you can go back to giving them a hard time.
Craig, I want to go back to what you said, too, about Connor Garland having such specific goals for the offseason. And I'm sure other players have these. The only other player I've ever spoken to that laid out like 7 specific goals for the offseason was Aaron Ekblad. And the whole time I've been covering hockey like this, at least that said so specifically. Petey, when did you guys know with the Coyotes, like, oh, this Connor Garland, he's going to stick. Like, he's there's something different about him, because he has talked a lot about how, you know, for the first few years, he's just trying to carve out a permanent role in the NHL. And he even said it in Craig's story. Now this is different. He goes from, I'm just trying to stick in the NHL, to all of a sudden I might be going to Boston.
Yeah, you think the first time we saw him at his first camp, he turns heads. I mean, he still was the same player then as far as his work ethic, his ability to get to net, the net. But we called it at the time, it was junior habits. You know, he'd carry the puck too long, or he'd try to beat guys he shouldn't try to beat, or, you know, dipsy doodles or swiveling with his feet, just a little too fancy, that things that he needed to get out of his game. And I don't know if that's, you know, you score a couple hundred points in the Quebec League, you play a different style than you need to play to be successful here. He needed the American League to grow as a person and a player. He matured. He learned to do things the right way. It wasn't always about, hey, look how flashy I can be. It's, what do I need to do to help the team be successful? Once he turned that around, he was incredibly noticeable. And when you saw how hard he worked in practice, veterans would go, oh my, like, we better pick it up a little bit, because everybody on every team, that's the other thing people don't realize, they're fighting for a job. They're fighting for a job, not just the trade deadline, but the guy coming up from the minors or the guy coming in off the taxi squad. I better perform. So I think Connor helps make players around him better because he works so darn hard.
They've got about six games left before the trade deadline. So to your point, you know, anybody on the Coyotes that does get traded this year will get traded when they're on the road. Craig, you put in the notes, I think it's an interesting conversation. They probably won't be in definitively or out definitively of the playoffs. They're probably going to be right around where they are now, point, maybe 2 points up or down from St. Louis when the trade deadline hits. So how do you handle this if you're Bill Armstrong now? Because, you know, he wants to put his fingerprints all over this team and he wants to get draft picks and prospects. But at the same time, you don't want to throw away a potential playoff run. And again, they were in the playoffs last year and they were very close to the playoffs the year before. There's this perception of this team of, well, they don't have draft picks, so they're a mess. You need the picks, but you may very well be a playoff team for the second straight year.
There's a lot of things to consider here. And I don't blame Bill Armstrong for going up until the last possible minute, if he can do it with this. I mean, if they fall off the pace, they don't play well in Southern California, you may have a much better argument for selling off whatever pieces you can. But if people are expecting wholesale changes at the trade deadline, I think they're probably going to be disappointed, because I don't think it's going to be easy to make trades this year. We've talked a lot about the reasons for that. The Canadian border quarantine has dropped to 7 days, but it's still a factor. We still have the flat cap for the foreseeable future. So with a lot of teams up against the cap, it's dollar in, dollar out. That makes trades more difficult. You have the expansion draft coming up as well, so you have to think about your protected list. There's a lot of stuff going into this right now. And then with Bill Armstrong in particular, some of his most tradable assets are hurt. Antti Raanta may not play another game for the Coyotes. They still don't have a timeline on his return. I'm certain they would have tried to trade him. Does that mean they can't trade Darcy Kuemper now, too, if they were going to go the nuclear option? Will they be able to trade Tyler Pitlick, who would probably bring something back at the deadline, but now is hurt and is week to week? All of those things are making it really tough on Bill Armstrong right now.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see, regardless of where they're at on the 12th, I think there will be moves made by the Coyotes. They'll be small. I don't know if they'll affect the core of the team. Craig, you talked about the nuclear option. The goaltender is something that they've looked at for a long time. You've got Antti Raanta's contract expiring. I know that they would have liked to have seen what he was could get in return on the trade market. And same with Darcy Kuemper. But with their injuries, that's just not going to happen. Even if they come back and play right now, I'd be extremely surprised if they were able to move one of those pieces. The most interesting one to me is Connor Garland. But beyond that, you look at the free agent defenseman, and so many, you know, do not trade clauses and age of player and so forth. I think the only one of the free agent defensemen that is movable right now, or probably going to get moved, is Alex Goligoski. Yeah. He can defend. He can still play offensively. He's a leader. He's been on good playoff teams. He's experienced, good locker room guy. That's a piece, no matter where they are on the 12th, would not surprise me if Alex moves on.
Yeah. What
last
about,
point.
What about Jordan Osterley? Because I've had some teams or some writers call me about him. I think there may be some teams sniffing around Jordan Osterley, but what do you think your sense is with the Coyotes of what you do with him going forward?
Well, last year, we'll go back to the bubble. When we grade defensemen post-game through that entire bubble experience, he was our best defenseman. Breaking pucks out of the zone, defending on the penalty kill. He was on the second power play. He played in all situations, played them well, not exceeding or excelling. He played them well. He did everything well. So he was our top defenseman. And we were like, this kid is great. We got a great dollar value. He's doing everything right. As you said, his plays dropped off a little bit. I'm not in the room, so I don't know what, if he's unhappy about his ice time, if he's got something going on away from the ice, or I really don't know. I know what kind of a player he is. I think he's a guy with his, what he's going to make and his contract. I think he's a really valuable piece. But I also think that Bill Armstrong recognizes his value and what they can get for that value. And I would be surprised if he is not a Coyote next year. I think they re-sign him.
Real quick, and we'll obviously get back into Coyotes when we get into listener questions, but I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Michael Bunting. He was really the only bright spot. It's just one game against Colorado, but if he can bring any sort of presence like that, that's going to help them in a big way here down the stretch. What do you think they're expecting from him? Can you treat the final 20 games as a tryout for somebody like that when you are also trying to make the playoffs?
Maybe. I'm not sure that's how they're thinking of it. I, at this point, I think it was Rick Tocchet trying to find guys who can give him consistent NHL play. They had guys at the bottom of this roster who probably should not be NHL regulars. Let's be honest about that. So when you're getting... when you've got a bunch of guys who are struggling and you've got a guy lighting it up the way he was in Tucson, he warranted a look. He deserved it. He deserved a shot. And look, a lot of people will say, well, why didn't Michael Bunting get this shot earlier? Going back to Connor Garland, there were elements of his game that needed work. And Rick Tocchet talked about how he was a bit sloppy in his game earlier, but he did. He finally committed to that. Sounds like he just committed more to being a better pro, taking care of his body, doing all those other things. One game, clearly you can't judge a guy off one game. You have to show consistency. That's a big part of the NHL, but maybe he could be, sort of Connor Garland light, another story like that, at least where with time you brought a guy along in development and he can be a serviceful NHL player.
And I think that was one of the issues with him down in Tucson, Craig, was his consistency. I think you would see glimpses of that offensive player, that the Coyotes really wanted and needed, but it wouldn't last. The other issue with Michael Bunting down there is we talk about Connor Garland getting under people's skin. Michael Bunting, it's to a whole new level. Like, he's glove in the face after whistles. Like, he's not well liked when he touches the ice in the American League. There are teams out to get Michael Bunting, and he really agitates the opponents. He's chirping them. He's vocal. He's dirty at times. That's part of the game you need to be on the edge and be competitive. But what it did is it took his team out of games that they should have been in. He ends up being in the penalty box. We need him on the ice. So you need to walk that fine line. And I think he's matured enough to get some of that out of his game, keep the hard work and grittiness to his game and ability to get to the net, but take out some of the after the whistle stuff that what he didn't realize it hurt himself and it hurt his team. So he's been able to remove that. He's a hardworking kid that can make things happen. Fans are going to like watching him. It's, can he sustain it? I'm not sure. And talk about a tryout. Like you said, there's times where Rick Tocchet's out there saying, hey, let's put the ping pong balls in the lottery machine and find out what we get tonight. It may come to that down the stretch.
All right. Let's switch over big picture around the NHL. I'll also, Craig, I will give you that you did put this first in the notes to rate and review the show, and I just skip right over it. So now, rate and review the show. You'll make Craig happy, and you'll make Craig's kids proud of him. Wasn't that the original reason that we started doing rating and reviewing
the
show?
I think it was to feed my children, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's kind of high stakes if you rate and review the show. The Canadian
a lot of ramen around here. A lot of ramen.
Is it at least top ramen?
No.
It got me through school. Nothing wrong with a little ramen and melted Cheese Whiz.
But, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, homemade mac and cheese.
Spice, by the way, that's
ramen and Cheese Whiz.
Melted Cheese Whiz,
buddy,
and ketchup,
drain it.
Hot dogs.
Melted Cheese Whiz ramen noodles. Homemade mac and cheese for under 50 cents.
Anytime we make dinner plans with Petey, it's going to be at a restaurant.
Got me through college, Craig. Don't knock it.
All right, let's start in that Canadian division where it is. We're finally now, unfortunately, seeing the effects of COVID on that division. Montreal missing games, Vancouver missing games, and the Travis Hamonic stuff. You know, he was one of the few players that opted out of the bubble back in July, and it clearly wasn't because he didn't want to play hockey. But now he's on a Vancouver team that's dealing with this. And there's a lot of different ways to look at this story. I mean, the first thing that I think jumped out to all of us, though, is have some compassion if you're a fan base. And I know it's the Vancouver fan base, and Vancouver fans, based on my experience as a child, they are insane up there. They're acting insane again now. Not all of them, but a portion of them.
That's a kind word for it, actually. I just think they're being jerks. I'll just come out and say it. And that fan base has a reputation for that. But yeah, his daughter has a respiratory illness. This is why he wanted to stay out of the bubble, stay out of the bubble in the first place, because he's concerned about his family. And now he has it. So it's just sort of a reminder that, again, what we were talking about earlier, there are all these personal sides that players deal with that we just dismiss because they're well paid. Well, they're still there. And when you're talking about the health of your child, I can't imagine anything scarier than that.
Yeah, I look at this and you just, first of all, surprised it's been able to stay out of the Canadian division this long. It affected the teams in the States right from training camp. Teams were affected right up till now. I mean, you see it continually being an issue in Canada. Just getting it now, they had, you know, there's fewer people. The way they approached it was different. It was a different atmosphere in Canada. So that starts things. And now this, to have hockey become bigger than health of a family member is difficult for me. I think it's, you know, they want to watch hockey on Saturday night. Who doesn't? But let's not take it out on one particular player. Hopefully the club can help bridge the gap with the fans here and we can move past this, because it's to say a guy got COVID and you start blaming him for shutting the team down just isn't a fair comment. So hopefully Vancouver moves past it. They're frustrated. They're not where they thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. They thought they were a playoff team. They were young and upcoming and quick. That's not the case. Travis Green's staff is on the last year of their contract. There's concern on whether they're going to get rehired. It's not the season they were hoping for, and they're taking it out on a defenseless Travis Hamonic.
If Jamie Eisner were here, he would be singing Nonlinear Progression right now. We all saw this coming in Vancouver. We all saw it coming. I didn't think they were as good as they thought they were. They had a lot of issues, and they overachieved last year in the postseason. I saw this coming. I didn't even predict them to make the playoffs this year, and maybe now they'll start taking a harder look at some of the genuine flaws on that roster.
Yeah, unless things change dramatically, I think the four playoff teams in the North are set. Where they finish, TBD, but I think you've got your four teams, I think. I don't think the Darryl move in Calgary shocked the system as much as they were hoping for. So I don't think they get in either. I think those four teams are set.
That division has been a lot of fun. I mean, I know I've talked about this on the show before. I don't want them to keep it because I don't like the idea of just automatically putting one of them in the final four, although also limiting it to just one of the final four. But that goes for me more of I don't like having four teams from each division make the playoffs and then play each other. I just like 1 through 8 in the conference. Either way, though, it has been entertaining. Is it safe to have all the Canadians play each other all year, every year? Because their fans, if you think they're bad when they turn on their own team, I mean, you've got Vancouver fans blaming Montreal that their players are sick. You've got Toronto fans just jumping in and trolling all of them. You've got Oilers fans jumping in and saying, none of you matter because we have McDavid. Like, the fan bases in Canada are so mean to each other. It's unbelievable.
But it's really created an interest in the game this year. Up north of the border, television viewing is up. Ratings are up. People are interested. And more water cooler talk. It's been good for the sport in Canada. It will never last. You can't ask Vancouver to travel to Toronto and Montreal as part of their division. It's not fair. I think it was a great one-off. I'm glad that they were able to get the season in under the wire. But nothing we will ever see like this again. I don't think.
All right, let's start talking.
If we went to 8 divisions, we could have two 4-team Canadian divisions.
Craig, why don't they listen to you on that, Craig?
One more team in Canada. Where should we put them, Luke? Quebec?
That's, well, yeah, no, probably not.
Craig, why don't they listen to you on that? Did you talk to Bettman? Have you put in a call?
In fact, I did long ago, and I talked to Bill Daly, and his email to me was, why would we consider that?
Really? I don't know. I thought it was brilliant. I think the rivalries would be automatic. I think you still play every team in the league, home and away. But that division, that was brilliant, Craig. Again, I patted you on the back twice. I got to knock this off.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's two strikes.
I know.
A little gross, actually.
I know. Sorry.
Maybe that's just Bill Daly's signature on his emails. So Bill Daly, why would we consider that?
Yeah.
They did listen to you on the draft lottery, though. The modifications there were the same team. Yeah, it took a while. All right, let's start talking about the good teams. The Buffalo Sabres have 3 points out of their last four possible, one of the hottest teams in hockey. They snapped their 18-game losing streak. And then, in the midst of all that, they trade Eric Staal to Montreal, which you put in the notes. I almost forgot it happened. I don't know. It's trade. It's a big name. I mean, the guy scored 50 goals in the season a long time ago. But I don't know how much of an impact that's going to make on anything.
What do you think, Pete? Does he have anything left? Can he? I mean, Montreal's already in the playoffs in my mind, but can he be enough to help them engineer a first-round upset of the Maple Leafs?
You look at what they have up the middle of the ice in Montreal, and we talk often about how crucial and important the center ice position is. Mm-hmm. The Montreal Canadiens centers, Nick Suzuki's 21, Kota Kanami is 20, Evans is 24. They're extremely young. They have a 28-year-old, Philip Danault is their first-line center at 28. It's a young, young group. And if you can bring in a guy that's experienced, he's been there, he knows how to prepare for games, he's an NHL player, I think it's a good move for them. They gave up a third and a fifth. Craig, we talked about the draft before. A third and a fifth-round pick, honestly, there's two kids that are going to go to the development camp in Buffalo for the next 3 years and never talk about them again. And I don't want to be that blunt, but that's just statistically the reality of it. We'll never see those kids. So
Buffalo.
Yeah. So I think for Montreal, it's a good move. I think even if he's just fourth-line sporadic player, I think he helps them. So will he be a star in the playoffs? I wouldn't count on that. Could he come up with a big assist that helps them win a game? Yeah, I think he can. So I think it's a good move on Montreal's part to get an experienced centerman. I think it's only going to help their room. They've got Corey Perry there now, Shea Weber, so they do have some experience. I think it's a good move at the right time for Montreal.
Yeah, I mean, even Taylor Hall went to Buffalo and we never heard from him again. And he's well past development camp. So
yeah,
that's just their issues up there. Yeah, that is a good point. I was looking at it more just from like Buffalo making moves doesn't make a lot of sense. But if Staal comes up with even one or two big games in the playoffs, best of seven, that could change everything. And they really don't have the experience there other than, Corey Perry and Shea Weber, like you just said. Let's look at some of these divisions now. Last week, we really focused on the top, like the true legitimate cup contenders. And obviously, something could change, but we were looking at Vegas, Colorado, Tampa, and Toronto. But we're kind of getting to the point where the top three teams are starting to separate themselves in a lot of these divisions. So let's go through some of the races just to make the playoffs. And I want to start in the East because I'm a little surprised to see Boston down here. They're still in fourth. They're still in a decent spot, but they're 9 points behind Pittsburgh, the Islanders, and the Capitals. So it's really kind of a three-team race between Boston, Philadelphia, who just put Shane Gostisbehere on waivers, although he did clear, and the Rangers, who beat Philadelphia by like seven every time they play. How do you guys see this one shaping up?
Well, I would point out first that Boston has a few games in hand on those other teams. So if they get hot, they can separate themselves a little bit from that pack, and that may be all it takes with the...
And they should, right?
They should, right? But something doesn't feel quite right with Boston. And look, I've talked about this for 3 years. Eventually, I'm going to be right that the Bruins are going to start declining. I've been waiting for it because some of their key players are older, right? And they obviously lost some things finally in this offseason. Torrey Krug is gone. Zdeno Chara, I didn't think he could play until he was 50. We've finally proven correct there. I don't know. I just sort of thought something was going to start declining with this team. They're still a really good team. Don't get me wrong. The top of that lineup is elite. Those players are incredible, but it doesn't feel like they have the depth, first of all, that they've had. And they're just not separating the way they have in the past.
Yeah, I don't think this is a team that's going to win the division. And we look at Boston Bruins of the past, maybe two, three years ago, and you said this team legitimately can run at the cup. I think you're right, Craig. I think they're on the decline there, but they still have an abundance of talent. They can score when they need to. I think that's the team that makes the playoffs out of the East. The Rangers concern me. I'm not sure what's going on. You hear some talk of the coach there. I don't think they'll make a move right now, but I'm not sure the Rangers are ready. They don't have the right mix, I don't think. I think Boston's in. And the one that surprised me is how Pittsburgh has really come on the last 15 games. You know, they struggled the first 20. They were below the double line of the playoff line. I didn't think Pittsburgh was going to be a playoff team at that point. So they're rolling. I mean, their offense, when they're going, they're tough to stop. They're experienced. They're well coached. They're playing good hockey right now.
I'm glad you brought up Pittsburgh, because a certain member of this podcast didn't think that they were a playoff team this year. I'm not going to name that person, but
obviously Jamie, right?
I laughed because
it must have been Jamie.
Pittsburgh, of course they're going to be a playoff team, and clearly they are now. Go ahead, Jamie.
It's been proven in the past that I cannot give responses on the Penguins without letting emotion factor in. Although, as Petey just said a couple weeks ago, they didn't look like a playoff team. And then Malkin got hurt, and all of a sudden they are unstoppable. It's the weirdest thing. I mean, I have the last 7 years of a body of work watching them lose to Boston seemingly every time they play them. And now they can't stop beating Boston. So we'll see. I mean, my concern with the Penguins is that they haven't won a playoff series in I don't even know how long now. So we'll see how they do in the first round against the Capitals. I hope they're able to beat them, or the Islanders.
And you know what, Luke? What's hard about this, Luke, is the strange season we are having is how little you see these other teams play.
Yeah.
And how little you know about them. And when I say you, I mean me. Because you knew everybody. You'd see everybody play. Everybody played everybody. You'd see how, you know, McDavid matched up against Crosby this year. You saw all those things. Now it's almost like it might as well be the KHL. You just don't know enough about these teams. I don't know what Boston's schedule is down the road. I could tell you the Coyotes, the Kings, and the Blues. I have no idea what Boston has ahead of them. So it's really difficult to plan and think about the other parts of the league. And what I think is going to be extremely interesting, and it's not going to happen for months, is when you have to finally play a team outside of your division. You know, the last final four teams, when you're playing somebody outside of your division that you haven't prepared for or seen the entire season. It's going to be really interesting.
It sure is. That's part of the intrigue of the final four, as we'll call them. Just two more things on this division. The Rangers, not if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think that's a bad thing for this organization. They've taken steps this year. This team is making progress. There are a lot of good signs there. So, again, if they miss, that's okay. I think just being in the playoff race is going to be good for this young group. The team I can't figure out, what happened to Philadelphia? Why can't they play defensive with this goaltending so god-awful?
That was the question I was just about to ask. You basically took the words out of my mouth. This is the Rangers, to me, are trending in the right direction. If they get in, that's cool. If not, then fine. They'll probably make it next year. Philadelphia, and I'm not going to pretend I don't love it, but what is the deal with this team? Especially, like you said, the goaltending. Carter Hart was supposed to be the answer, and he looked like it for a while, and now they just cannot. He lost a game to the Rangers earlier this season, 9-0, when the Rangers didn't have a coach, right? I didn't just dream that.
Oh, and it's a team, when you look at them again on paper, there's still a lot of really good pieces to that Flyer club. You're right. With the goaltender Hart, you thought he was taking the next step and he would be able to put this team on his back. But you've seen it. You saw it with Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. These young goalies, you see him and win a Stanley Cup, and then now he's expendable. I don't know. The lifespans are shorter. I don't know if it's physically the way they play and their hips can't hold up. I honestly don't know, but these young guys seem to come in and come out, especially in the East. But you've still got a team with Giroux and Couturier and Voracek. You've got some talented pieces. They just haven't lived up to what their potential is. You've got Kevin Hayes, Goss Despair on waivers. He was a guy that 2 years ago was coveted by the entire league. I don't know what's happening there. I don't know if it's internal, if it's in the locker room, if it's an atmosphere issue. I really don't know. On paper, this team should be doing better.
Yeah, the coaching staff should be able to figure this out, too. I mean, it's a veteran coaching staff. This is just bizarre to me. But Carter Hart is the piece that just jumps out for me. It's a guy that was considered for the Calder Trophy just two seasons ago. Really looked like he had emerged as an up-and-coming elite goaltender. And I hate goaltending stats because most of them are garbage. Most of them are team stats. But one of, I think, the best analytics is goal saved above average
If you go on Evolving Hockey and look at goals saved above average, go all the way to the bottom of the list at number 77. There's Carter Hart at -26.02. Wow. That's a brutal stat.
Yeah. And we all know, and you could talk about all the other positions and the, you know, inability to have offense. If your goaltender is not helping you win games, you're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah. It's just a reality.
And confidence too, right? It saps confidence from a team in front of them. You find yourself changing the way you play when you're.
Yeah. You've seen it on the bench, the body language, the arms drop, shoulders drop when you give up a bad goal. I've seen it here in Arizona over the years. Like, and there's no way around it. Like, you just can't. Once you believe in a goalie, amazing things can happen. You know, and Mike Smith carried this team to an undefeated February in 2012. Did it almost on his own, just from his inspired play, because winning breeds winning. They had a horrible season, and Brian Boucher had the shutout streak. One of the most fun experiences of my entire Coyote career, because you believed you were going to win. And when you have a goalie that's on a streak, you can win. When they are not on a streak and they are struggling, you cannot overcome that. It's just too much emotionally on the bench. It's here we go again. And I'm sure in Philadelphia, it's here we go again. And you just can't get yourself over that hump.
What was the year where they used 9 goalies or 8 goalies? I think Philadelphia probably thought they were finally over this, but apparently not. All right. So to Petey's point, it's tougher to see all the teams this year because they're all contained within their 4 divisions. For me, I mean, I can't stop watching the Canadian division because they're so crazy. I'm obviously watching the East because of the Penguins, and clearly more than anything, I'm watching the Coyotes division and the Honda West. The division that has kind of escaped me a little bit this year is the Central, and I cannot help but look at this. 2 things really stand out. 1, okay, you expect Tampa to be great, and they are. How are Carolina and Florida right there with them? Like, to me, those look like playoff teams, but they're within a point or tied with Tampa. And I'm wondering, is that just simply a couple other teams had to rise to the top because the bottom of this division is so bad, or is there something else?
I think that's part of it. I don't want to put all the eggs in that basket. I think Carolina is a very good team. Florida, I've waited for them to take a step. We've talked about this before. They have some elite players, but I'm not sure that they have the depth to be this good. I do think this is a really bad division at the bottom. And that's sort of what's playing into this. But you also have a weird situation where Dallas hasn't played up to its potential. They still have the chance because they have a bunch of games in hand. And if I'm picking between Nashville, Chicago, Columbus, and Dallas, I'm still taking the Stars to be the 4th playoff team in this division. But we'll see how it plays out because all those teams are in play.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. Obviously, at the beginning of the season, I had Dallas in. I mean, you looked at their body work last year, and just on paper, you said this team's a playoff team. So I was really surprised. I don't know how badly COVID affected the room. And, some people, they're in their 20s, they overcome it. Some guys don't. Some guys are sick. Some guys can't get their wind back, their legs back. They can't get that first 2 weeks of training camp, missing that's a big deal. So, again, not blaming that, but potentially there's issues there. I don't know. Nashville's the team. Again, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about here. Nashville's a team I thought was dead and buried 3 weeks ago. I'm talking about blowing up coaching staffs and management. And now you can't – they're on a roll. They've got experienced players. They've got experienced goaltenders. They've been in the playoffs before. Their kick at the can and their window is closing. Like, it's got to be now. I've got Nashville over Chicago, and I don't think Dallas has enough time to catch up the ground.
When I look at them with 4 games in hand on Nashville and only 5 points back, that's 500 hockey to catch them.
I agree, Craig, but they've had those games in hand all season, and they still never make up any ground. And we'll see. What are we at? Winning percentages? 513 to 500? Yeah, I mean, it's close. Well see.
I go back to your goal differential thing, too. Dallas has a plus goal differential. Those other teams are in the red big time.
But I think that part of that with Nashville is they started off so poorly. And I think you're seeing that change now. Again, I guess you and I will talk about it again in 5 weeks. And that's why we do this.
It is remarkable that Nashville, because I'm with you, Petey, a couple weeks ago. It was like, okay, Nashville's had a good run the last few years. It was inevitable. It was going to start to come to an end here. And it felt like it was. And it's not like any one player has carried them, which is maybe why they're having success. And I'm sure some of it helps that they're in this division, but they are in a playoff spot right now. Craig, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about Stan Bowman and his new role with Team USA, because I know you're such a big fan. That was it?
I have to say about that.
You had the platform right there.
And
you, You just turned it aside.
I don't have my cowbell. I wish I had my giant captain's bell. I don't get it. You I don't get it. Other than the family name, I don't get it.
We already sort of hit on the North Division. Any chance? I mean, I guess it would have to be Calgary that jumps up and would have to catch Montreal. I will say there's certainly a chance, but I think Calgary has more talent than Montreal, but Montreal's putting it together. Calgary just isn't. It sort of feels like a lost season for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's any changes there. Again, it's who wins the division. And will home ice make a difference in the playoffs? You know, if you're talking about first-round Montreal-Toronto, that doesn't get any better than that in Canada, does it? Montreal-Toronto in the opening round is great.
I would love to see it.
But what if Edmonton has to go to Toronto and travel across country for every game? That's just uncommon for the first round of the playoffs to have that difficult of a travel schedule. I think it's going to be a great four teams to watch in the playoffs. I think they all play a little bit differently, and they have different elements of excitement. I'm really looking forward to the North playoffs. I still don't know who's going to win the division. I said last week that Winnipeg's my sleeper. Nobody talks about Winnipeg. They're under the radar, and they're knocking on the door. They're just a few points behind Toronto. I know Toronto has a game in hand, but we'll see if Toronto's goaltending can continue to hold up. We'll see. I think it's going to be a great – that's going to be the most interesting playoff series, the ones up in Canada.
Are you guys buying that San Jose is back in this race in the West?
No.
No.
Okay. Some interesting things, and we've talked a lot about how brutal St. Louis's schedule is the rest of the way, and it is. They're going to have a really tough time. But the Coyotes have to play – obviously, they have to play a lot more road games than they have to play home games. They're in the midst of a 9-game road trip. After this, obviously, it balances out. So if they survive it, maybe they're still in it. But L.A. and San Jose both have a lot more home games remaining than road games. So I wonder, who is the favorite of these four teams to get in?
I would be, from the Coyotes' perspective, more concerned with L.A. I just think L.A. looks like a better team. San Jose, maybe we just haven't seen their best. And their four games against the Coyotes, with the Coyotes 1-3, they picked up a point in the very first game of the season, too. I honestly, you don't often see the Coyotes almost toying with the team. It sort of felt like that these last two games against the Sharks. I don't think that if San Jose makes the playoffs, that means St. Louis fell apart and the Coyotes fell apart and LA fell apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I it's funny. You all prognosticate and you make your plans on paper. I thought San Jose would be one of the three teams fighting for that fourth spot coming into the season. I predicted Dubnyk to have a better year than he's having. I thought he would really help their goaltending tandem there. I thought they'd have a rebounding year at the back end from what they did last season where they really struggled. You know, expected Carlson to have a better year. And those things haven't happened. I don't think this is the year for them right now. I still think it's going to come down to Arizona and LA. I just think the schedule for St. Louis is just too difficult. And as much as we talked about Colorado at the beginning of the segment, St. Louis is going into Denver for back-to-back games tonight and tomorrow. That is going to be very difficult the way the St. Louis Blues are playing and the way the Colorado Avalanche are playing for the Blues to come out of there with points. And on the flip side of that, Arizona has Anaheim and LA. You could easily see a 4-point swing this weekend. So I think it's going to come down to LA and Arizona. And we said it last week, the 5th and the 7th of April are critical. But one thing, Craig, and we've talked about this, the mistakes that maybe we make is this is a critical road trip. This is a critical series. I found myself saying that 5 times, 6 times this season already. Oh, this is an imperative homestand or this is an imperative road trip. Here we are. They're 1 point out. So until they're eliminated mathematically, it's one game at a time. And I know that's the way Rick Tocchet's approaching this, one game at a time.
I meant to say this earlier, throw this at you, PD. I wonder what you thought about this, and maybe it's just making too much out of it. But if there's a positive to come out of Colorado, man, if this team isn't focused after that kind of loss going into these games, I don't know what would focus them. It's almost like that maybe that could serve as a wake-up call for them for how prepared they have to be for these next four games or at least tonight's game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. You do. They got embarrassed. There's no other way to say it. They got embarrassed, and they need to have a better game. I promise they were reminded of that over the last 48 hours. They know what's going to be expected of them. Luckily for them, and I know Anaheim has got some young talent and they're coming and they're going in a certain direction, but it's not going to start tonight. I don't know if you heard of Gibson's playing.
He's not, actually.
Yeah, so I think if Gibson's playing, all bets are off. He's a guy that can make 45 saves and steal a game. I would look for the Coyotes to have a much better effort, and we talked about starts. I would think they're going to have a good start tonight.
Yeah, that would be huge, and it's certainly it's a good time to play the Ducks as many times as you can before John Gibson is in there. Let's let's get to some of these questions, which are now not pulling up on my phone, so I have to get back. All right, you guys ready for these?
Stolarz is playing tonight, by the way. So,
oh yes. See, again, I'm a newbie here, Luke. So, like last week, we got to the questions, and here I got on the internet. I've got NHL.com up. I'm ready to come up with some brilliant hockey analysis. And what do I put on my hot dogs? How do you prepare for that? How do you prepare for that?
You're gonna have to get adjusted to our listeners. Here, the first one is a clear hockey question. Ozzy writes in, so who's more disappointing, Sabres or the Flyers with the lower save percentage?
I got to go with the Flyers. I mean, what did any of us expect anything from the Sabres?
I didn't. Well, no, I don't think so.
I didn't expect, but this bad though, Craig? Like they still put together, like you look at the roster, you thought with Eichel and you know, you make the Taylor Hall move and Stahl and Skinner and, you know, Gergensen's and their goaltending, you thought maybe, I say Buffalo. I never thought they'd lose that many in a row. That's hard to do, that you can't run into a team that's not playing well and get a win. So I'll go Buffalo.
Okay, Jeffrey Travis Twyman writes in, and he later acknowledges this is sort of a joke, but also he kind of wants to know the answer. He says, four firsts, Hayton and Keller for Eichel. Who says no?
Me.
And why is it Eichel?
Craig, go ahead.
Craig says no.
Four first-round picks, Barrett Hayton and Clayton Keller for Jack Eichel? No!
So I will go a step farther. I wouldn't trade any of those pieces one for one for Jack Eichel, but that's me.
Wow. You're going to have to explain that one.
I won't go too far. Well,
He's in one now.
No, he's a high-skilled player. He's a high-skilled player when things are going his way, when he's in the right spot, in the right position where he's happy. When anything goes against that, whether he's with the wrong line mate, the wrong line, the wrong ice time, he's not a happy player, and he will play accordingly. I don't know if those type of players, even with the high skill, can overcome that to help a team succeed, unless you have an extremely tight team with high and experienced talent. Could he go to Pittsburgh? Absolutely. Could he come to Arizona? I don't know if he helps. I think I don't know if the leadership is there to overcome things when they're not going well for Jack Eichel.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fair. I at least on paper would be willing to give up some combination of that for Eichel, but I hear what you're saying, Petey, and there might be something to that. I mean, if you're making that trade, Eichel needs to come in and take you.
Well,
like,
at what
to the
point
Western
do you
Conference
say
final.
He's got to do something? At what point?
Yeah,
I might be there.
You got to have some impact, and I mean that team's a train wreck.
Yeah. We got to wait to see. Like, there are things. This is that touchy point. Now, there's things I know that I'm not quite ready to talk about. So we're going to have to do this. Maybe we'll do this podcast sometime at midnight.
And then I'll
see some other things. Have you really?
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
We should do it from a bar.
Yeah, from a bar.
Maybe. We've done that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, here's Ben. His first question is about Michael Bunting, which we already talked about. But he says, what's more important to the Yotes' success, better execution of clean breakout passes in the D zone or the ability to keep sustained pressure in the offensive zone?
Wow. I'm going to let Petey answer that one.
Well, I think it's what we've talked about all season. It's their inability to create offense. I thought when they played the San Jose Sharks a week ago, they were creating offense because they were able to keep the puck alive in the offensive zone and keep it inside the blue line. When they can maintain the puck, get it low to high, get traffic at the net, they can create. Breaking out, honestly, you know what? I don't know if this Coyote team struggles with that. I don't think they're as bad as people think they are. Like, when things are in doubt, to get the puck out of the zone, just fire it around the boards. Hjalmarsson's had a career of that. Like, it's not – yes, we would like to get out of the zone cleaner, and you'd like to have possession all the way through the zone. But if you get across the blue line and live for another day, you're okay sometimes. I think offensively is where this team has struggled. And so I would say the offensive side of the puck is much more important.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that one. Chris writes in, the Toronto-based media seems to be getting excited over Galchenyuk's recent performances. Were we, the Wild, the Senators, too quick to move on, or is it a case of a guy playing above his level?
I have my own thoughts. I mean, yeah, I think this is a flash in the pan. I think Alex Galchenyuk has, at this point, established who he is as a player. But maybe Petey has different insights.
You know what? He's a kid that he's got a good personality. He's a nice kid. He really wants to be a good player. He really does. Like, he wants to work at it. He wants to learn. He has a very good skill set. Alex struggles to play within structure and play within a system of play. And when you put him in teams that have high structure or demand structure through their coaching staff, he has a harder time fitting in. Anthony Duclair was just like that too. A high-end guy with skill that just couldn't quite play within a structure of a team and in system play. Toronto, that they're run and gun, throw the puck over the blue line and let's skate to the puck. You know, maybe he's fit in better there because of the way they play. I hope he has success there because I really like Alex Galchenyuk. I think he's a good kid and a good person. I hope he succeeds there. I agree with Craig, though. I don't know if it's going to be long term.
Yeah, on that note with Alex, too, I hated the narrative that accompanied him when he came to Arizona, because when you talk to this kid, yeah, he's all the things that you just described. He's,
oh, yeah.
He really works at it. He really cares. He seems like a really good kid. He really does. It just that probably was the issue with him playing within structure all along. But as far as the attitude and everything, I never saw any of the stuff that was whispered when he was in Montreal.
It almost seemed like he cared too much where, like, you know, if things are going well, he's like, okay, I'm going to keep. But if things start to go sideways, it almost seemed like he internalized it too much, which would worry me playing in Toronto. I mean, at least in terms of if that's the way he's made up mentally, that's a great teammate to have. And I hear what you're saying, Petey. He might, just in terms of hockey, you know, systematic playing, he might be in a great position playing on the Maple Leafs, playing around a lot of skilled players. But it's going to be tough if things go sideways there.
And he's just a puzzle piece there. He's just a piece. He's not the piece. He's a piece. Like, and I think that's better for him. You know, he doesn't have to be Matthews or Marner. He doesn't have to be that. He just has to play hard, create some offense. I think it's a much better spot for him. I hope he has success.
Yeah, that's a good question by Chris. I'm glad because I wanted to bring that up and I forgot. Eldon writes in, is the expansion draft, is it going to be the same for Seattle as it was for Vegas, or will the rules be modified in any way? I had somebody ask me this the other day, too. Is Seattle going to step in and be as good as Vegas was? I don't think Seattle's going to the Stanley Cup in their first year, but there's going to be some players available. Yeah, and with everything that's happened the last, you know, 18 months or whatever, there's going to be players available that probably wouldn't have normally been available out there.
Yeah, the thing that I would say about Seattle, yeah, it's going to be really hard to replicate Vegas' success. That's just... it's really tough to do when you're getting teams cast offs, even if you see some of them as having upside like a William Karlsson. But I was talking to Seattle's assistant GM Rick Olchek the other day, and he had talked about the challenge of scouting and how much that's going to impact Seattle, not just at the amateur level, but at the pro level. They've got to draft an entire roster, and it's been really hard for them to scout. So that's been a challenge for Seattle.
And I think one of the other things that will be different this time around, and I can't speak specifically to the NHL rules on how that draft will take place. I wish I knew more. I don't. I know the approach of general managers will be different going into this because they created a monster in Vegas on their own doing. I mean, they made trades and traded draft picks to Vegas to protect players that maybe they shouldn't have protected. They gave up more than I think they would have liked because they thought they could. And what you've done now is you've created a team that has came out of the gates, you know, with a gang of fire, and they're still there because they had the draft pick. So I think you'll see general managers much more cautious. You can only protect so many players. That's just the rule. So there's going to be good players available. I just don't think you'll see general managers trading draft picks and players to Seattle to protect more players.
You know what would be a funny story to write, and I may do this summer or right before the expansion draft, ranking the blame of each team in Vegas' success. So who's most to blame, who's least to blame?
Wow.
Vegas would be Florida at the bottom of that list because they gave up Teemu Pulkkinen.
Yeah, who wasn't even on the roster at the time. I don't understand that. But
Yeah, how does that work out? Florida and Minnesota did this to everybody, and yet the Coyotes in Columbus, but Columbus was kind of stuck. You could see that one coming a little bit. But yet the Coyotes and some of these other teams in the division have had to pay for it the last few years. Florida's not paying for it at all, except they lost a couple of really good players.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Seattle's going to come out and they're going to have a good hockey team. It's going to be good players. They're going to have a good team. Do I anticipate the success Vegas had? No, I don't. Maybe a playoff team, but I think they're a team that's going to be at that playoff line. I don't think they're going to run away with the division and compete for the Stanley Cup. But again, like Craig said, you know, they're out there scouting and maybe they've got a few rabbits up their hat. Who knows? We'll see.
Joseph writes in, what is Taylor Hall really worth and why did he not go to the Avalanche last year? Craig's just telling us to be quiet.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it because, I mean, he just, wow, what he's done in Buffalo, or more like what he hasn't done in Buffalo. Just,
yeah.
Taylor Hall's another player with an exceptional toolbox of skills. Elite, high end. His puck skills, his shot is world class, his speed. He was an MVP in this league. So those things are all true. But at some point you have to go, how many teams has he been on and what kind of success have those teams had, and go, what's there? What are we missing from the outside looking at Taylor Hall? You know, if you have an MVP 2-3 seasons removed, he's still one of your top players. You find ways to hold on to them. I'm not sure the value. And we go back to personalities. They're a real thing. You know, when you work around people at your job that maybe you don't see eye to eye with, it makes it tougher to go to work. Is that the case with him? I don't know. I know Taylor Hall's a good person. I liked Taylor Hall. We'd sit and talk hockey. He's a very, very bright hockey guy that wants to learn, and he's on top of the hockey. He's like, he knows the game. He's a good person. And I've heard that from people in the past. Well, he's not a good person. Absolutely untrue. Absolutely untrue. He's a nice kid. Do the puzzle pieces always fit together? They don't, you know? And so for him, he's another player that I think he has to have the right surrounding cast. And it wasn't here in Arizona. He didn't have the right cast around him.
Did you find that he had a tendency to freelance when things were breaking down or weren't, you know, did he try to do too much sometimes?
And we talked about that with Galchenyuk. Taylor Hall thought when he played, he can make a difference by himself every time he was on the ice. And you know what? Teams are defend too well. They're too strong, too fast. You can't do it by yourself. Even Connor McDavid needs teammates. You are absolutely correct when there were times that he felt he had to do it by himself. Mm-hmm. And he would carry the puck through 3 or 4 opponents because he felt he had to. He was really trying to help. He was trying to do the right thing because he thought he could do the right thing and help the team. And he was frustrated when that didn't happen. You know, the season he had in Jersey when he won the MVP, those things went well for him. And he was able to do those things, beat guys wide with speed, get to the net by himself and score. Didn't translate here in Arizona. I think he was a guy that tried to do it all by himself on a nightly basis, because when he looked around the locker room, it's guys he didn't know, he hadn't heard of. You know, it wasn't the star-studded rosters that you see around the league at that time. And I think it cost him a job here.
He's never really played on those star-studded teams. I mean, he gets drafted to Edmonton, obviously, when they were on their run of first-round picks. He goes to New Jersey, and he made them better.
Yeah, right.
I liked him here. It was just such a short time, but I will never understand why he decided to go to Buffalo voluntarily. I mean, whatever his value is, it's lower than when he went to Buffalo, and that's his choice.
Yeah. And you know what? We don't know the discussions with his agent, the management or the coach, and what promises are made or what story is told to that player. You don't know. And if they paint a picture that you're our guy, your top line, you're going to be the key to our power play, everything's going to be in your basket, that's pretty attractive to a player like Taylor Hall. Where he goes to Colorado, that's not the case. You know, he's not the guy.
And I think Taylor Hall's got a little bit of that in him where he likes to be the guy. And I think even in Buffalo with Eichel, okay, yeah, I can do this. Colorado, gosh, I don't know. Like, is he on the top line in Colorado?
Yeah, that's the thing. He probably wouldn't have been, right? You play in second line minutes with Kadri. And
yeah, and is that – and at some point when you recognize that that's where your career is, maybe you can take another – step or go a different direction in your career, but until you're ready for that, I don't know. And again, we're speaking for someone in their thought process. We have no idea. Maybe he wanted to get back to the East Coast. Travel's easier. You know, it's a different game there. You're an hour and you're in your own bed more often. I don't know. You know, maybe still, those things played into it.
I still wonder what would have happened here if, you know, we hadn't seen all the changes that we saw in management, whether he might have ended up back here because they were talking contract with him.
Yeah, you know,
ownership was talking contract with
it's
him.
Interesting how things work out. I don't know. And in hindsight, would you make that deal again for Taylor Hall with the draft picks? I don't know.
I'd like to have a first round pick.
Yeah.
See, I understand what you're saying, Craig, and I know 99.9% of people would say no, I wouldn't make that deal. I still like
he asked in hindsight.
Yeah, in hindsight.
I understood it.
I still like the mentality of going for it finally. I mean, they were in a great spot when they made that move. You know, we've talked about this before, but within a couple of days, Darcy Kuemper gets hurt and everything changes, and they still made the playoffs. I mean, I still like the mentality of making that move and going for it, because we really haven't seen a lot of the teams in town do that until the last couple of years. Now, all of a sudden, all the teams in town are doing
it. Yeah, when you see that, and I remember the day assistant general manager Steve Sullivan came into the coach's room and said, we got Taylor Hall. And I am not kidding. I thought it was a joke.
Like, so did I.
We heard there were rumors, but you're like, no, we didn't. We didn't do that. That's not something Arizona does. Mm-hmm. That's something, you know, that's the Coyotes don't do that. And you're like, no, it's real. And he went and put the name up on the lineup board, and you're going, this is real. Like, and you do get excited. We're in first place. You're like, you got supportive management, you got supportive ownership. They're giving you tools. You get excited. So you're right. Hindsight, would we like to have draft picks? Absolutely. At the time in first place, these playoff windows and chances to win are so small. When you have an opportunity, it was exciting that they went for it.
Yeah. What happens if Darcy Kuemper doesn't get hurt there? I mean, I remember the excitement surrounding it, because he played his first game in San Jose, and I actually wasn't going to take that trip. And then, you know, my editor at The Athletic said, yeah, we need to do that. So he flew me up. I chronicled his entire day from the time he departed, arrived in San Jose, everything they did. There was so much excitement. There was tons of national media that came for Taylor Hall's debut with the Coyotes in San Jose, which tells you how big a deal it was. It was really cool. Unfortunately, they came home the next day, they played the Minnesota Wild, and Darcy Kuemper was out for 2 months. And
Craig, am I right? In that first game, he gets the game-winning assist to Oliver Ekman.
It was a great play, too. Great play.
Yeah, it was. And then you said, oh my gosh, that's why we got him. He can make a difference. And then the next night,
beat outside, forecheck, got the puck and centered it to OEL, who, and if you remember what OEL said, I think I shot it 4 feet wide, but it hit a player and went in.
Yeah. But that, and then you come home and you have a tough night against Minnesota in a game that Kuemper wasn't even supposed to play. Raanta was scheduled to start and he got hurt. Kuemper wasn't going to play. He played. He gave up several goals, and the rest of the season changed.
Yeah.
I'll never forget what was it, a couple of days earlier when the Coyotes played New Jersey, and Taylor Hall is just sitting in the press box next to us, and he's watching the team he's on play the team he's probably going to, and it's just like that was such a surreal moment. He's like, he's on his phone trying to figure out what team he's playing for the next day. It was so strange.
I wrote about that, if you remember. And I felt I was on the phone with someone all the way down the press box talking to someone. And Taylor Hall came down, and I can hear him talking to Darren Ferris, his agent.
Oh, yeah.
No, saying a lot of things. By the way, one thing that I didn't write in that story at the time, he goes, as he's watching the Coyote, he goes, I just don't know if this team can score enough.
He did not.
He did. He absolutely did say that on the phone conversation. So. I didn't write that at the time because I didn't want to out him too much. But, well, yeah, it's been a problem around here for a while, Taylor.
Okay, we'll wrap up. There's a lot more questions. I'm sorry, we're not going to get to all of them, but we'll wrap up with these last. Let's do three more. Mike, keep, trade, or cut? Peeps, Cadbury cream eggs, or Robin eggs?
I didn't even see that question before.
I think you got to cut Peeps, right?
Me too.
Peeps out.
My daughter loves them, though. My daughter loves them. She got some drink that was Peep flavored, which I thought was the most
disgusting. Yeah, I saw that. Peep flavored Pepsi. Is that a thing? Can that be a thing? I'm going to go with the Cadbury. Right? I'm keeping the Cadbury because I am all about the creamy caramel. Now, Craig, is that going to get me in trouble?
No.
Okay. So just checking. I don't know the food rules yet. I'm sorry. Do I have to go back and listen to all the episodes, all 200, so I know what I need to, how I need to dress my hot dog? I just asking.
We always encourage everybody that is on the show, yes, to listen to the previous 270 plus episodes.
Good
but here,
grief.
here's another food question. So get ready. Non-linear donut ball delivery. Which Coyote player would be most likely to replicate the swagger of Erik Karlsson's apple eating during a post-game presser? And then second question for Coach Peters, are small spherical pastries correctly called donut holes, donut balls, or Timbits? And then finally, what's your preferred coffee order for Craig to pick up for you?
Well,
answer the last two, Petey. Go.
Yeah. I'm a Minnesota kid, so it was donut balls my whole life. But
yes,
it was donut balls.
Yes.
But I have to say, there is nothing better than a Timbit. And when a player stops in Canada on the road trip and brings a box of Timbits to the trainer's room where the guys are sharpening skates, there is nothing better in the morning. And coffee's easy. I've been getting up at 4 in the morning for 20 years. It's black. Black and hot.
Black coffee. Okay. Wow. You're a hardcore.
Yeah. No sugar, no cream, no flavors. Black.
You like Timbits better than Dunkin' Munchkins?
Yeah, I'm going to go Timbits. And maybe it's psychological. It's a Canadian thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just like that you called them donut balls because that is the correct answer. So, Petey, you're in. And also,
with the press conference question, my money's on Christian Fisher.
Yeah, that's
I don't even know how to answer that one. I do. We're not going to do it today, Craig. We'll save it like a teaser. Thin or thick? We'll save that. The crust. We'll save that for another episode.
Oh, yeah, that'll get heated.
I'm sure you've done that. I'm sure you've been there.
We've talked about this.
Yeah, of course you have.
I'm a New York style pizza fan, so I'm not going to trash that, but I'm a Chicago guy, so.
Here, we'll say this. We'll get into that. You know what?
That response?
I know that we're on timeline here, but I'm going to. One thing in the old NHL, you were allowed to eat pizza, it was a thing. When the game was over, players had pizza before they got to the bus. I don't know if people know that. There were pizzas in the locker room every night for players to eat. That was a thing. That is no longer the case. There are healthier options. It's better food, better focus on nutrition and fitness. But at the end of the day, there was pizza every single night on the road. And we, as a staff, would grade the pizzas. And you would go to the thickness of the crust. How buttery was the crust? What was the cheese like? How big were the pepperoni slices cut? Were they under the cheese or over the cheese? So we had, I was to the point where I had my own pizza cutter on the road in my travel trunk so I could cut the pizza to the appropriate size. You said all of this, Craig. The reason I told the story is because the number one place for pizza on the road in my 23 years was Chicago. And I wish I could tell you the name of the place, but it was square cut, thin crust with extra cheese, and it was phenomenal. It would be one of the highlights of the trip to Chicago. One of the many highlights, by the way, to a trip to Chicago. Definitely. But amazing pizza in Chicago. Mm.
Which Greg, how, may explain why I have that collage of Petey eating pizza from Greg.
See, and that is exactly what it was. And one more thing, Craig, look closely at those pictures and you will see in most of them, I am wearing a rubber glove, like the medical rubber gloves to eat my pizza. And I took a lot of grief for that. But keep in mind, I'm wearing a suit with a tie. My job is to have my hands on my keyboard. That's what I do for a living. So if I'm eating a piece of pizza and I need to quickly get to work, right, I don't have time to go to the bathroom and wash my hands. I rip off the glove and I'm right back grease-free on my keyboard.
So no grease ever on the keyboard?
Never.
So
Buffalo
you did a
wings,
job of that,
rubber gloves.
Keeping popcorn out of the coach's room.
Yes, a story for another day.
See, this is the insight that only Petey can bring, how to properly eat pizza on the road while being a video coach for an NHL
People think
team.
You're kidding. That is an absolute wings and pizza, always with a rubber glove. You don't have time to wash it, and you can't have a greasy keyboard.
We'll wrap up on this, Craig. How happy are you that when we get back in the studio now, you only have to pick up straight black coffee for Petey instead of the unicorn frappuccinos you used to have to pick up for Jamie?
This is going to save me so much money over the course of the podcast.
And I need your dignity. Gas station coffee. It's great. I don't need fancy $4 coffee. Gas station. I don't care.
No. I need the fancy coffee, Craig. You're going to have to go somewhere else. All right. That's going to do it for us. For Steve Peters, for Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.